Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
You're listening to Queers, a podcast about politics and culture with Simon Copland and Benjamin Riley.
Oh yeah, do you want to move on to that last question? I feel like it's sure. It's
yeah, I think it's a nice way to end.
It's the 24th of October, 2019. I'm Benjamin Riley.
And I'm Simon Copland.
Welcome to Queers. Each episode, we talk our way through questions on a theme, and this is, in fact, our last episode.
Yeah, as you may have noticed, it's been a couple of months since we've released an episode. Over this period, Ben and I have been talking about our own capacity and drive to continue with this project and have decided, a little reluctantly, that the time has come to hang up the microphones.
We've both really enjoyed making the podcast. It's been a huge part of our lives for the past, almost 4 years now?
Yeah, 4 years, yeah.
Yeah, but our view throughout the project has always been that we could, we'd only keep it going as long as we thought that the enjoyment and what we were getting out of it outweighed the frankly, extraordinary amount of work that we put into it on a weekly basis. With Simon getting to the pointy end of his thesis and work and studies becoming extremely busy for myself at the moment, I think we've crossed over that threshold.
This, we think, probably doesn't necessarily mean the end forever. We are keeping the door open for the potential that we may get the energy back in the future and reinvigorate things. We may think of new and different ways to keep this project going. But for now, we think Queers is coming to a close.
So, for example, we're going to keep the RSS feeds up. If you continue to subscribe to the podcast, other episodes might pop up at some point in the future if we decide that we've got the time and we want to do something. But for now, this is the end of our regular scheduled episodes. So today, we wanted to wrap up with a general discussion reflecting on what we've done. What was the point of this podcast? What have we learned? What have we achieved, if anything? What's changed in queer politics over the past 4 years and our own position since we started making this podcast? And has any of it, well, hopefully some of it, has been for the better? So, Simon, let's get started. How are you feeling about this all?
Look, I'm feeling okay about it. I think we just started chatting about this just before we recorded. That it's sad, obviously, and I think the main thing I'm going to miss is our fortnightly chats. It's always nice to catch up with you and have these chats, but it's like those TV shows that you don't want to end when after like a year or two of really dragging it out and doing it. You know, we don't want to be The Simpsons, Ben. We don't want to be The Simpsons and, you know, go years longer than our use by date. And I think that we've probably decided to do this at the right time. I still like the podcast, so it's nice to end when you still like the podcast and you still enjoy having these conversations. Because I think that if we went into next year, I'm, you know, like writing, just starting to write my thesis, and it's quite stressful. I know things are stressful for you at work. I feel like if we kept going, there's a real chance that I would start resenting it, and that is not what I want.
Yeah, totally. Well, it's not going to make for good podcasts, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I just think that this is probably the right decision for us to make at this point in time. And I mean, we were talking initially about going up until Christmas, and I'm glad that we've decided not to do that, because I think I'm kind of ready at this point in time to have a break, to let it be and to enjoy what we've done. And to move on from that. And, you know, as I said, there's a chance that we could get energized again in the future. You know, I never want to close the door of working with you ever again. It's not the point today, but I think that it's nice to, you know, to say, okay, well, this at this point in time, this is what we need.
Yeah, totally. I think it was one of those things where the decision felt like it had been hanging in the air for a while. And then as soon as one of us brought it up, we were both just totally on the same page, so that was good to be in that in that space together. And it is, I mean, you know, it is sad, but it does feel like the right time. And as I think we do talk about a bit on the podcast sometimes, I mean, this is just a huge amount of work, and Simon and I have both got a lot of other stuff going on. And there reaches a point with a project like this where you have to decide whether you want to put a heap of extra work in it to turn it into something new and something like, I don't know, I'm trying not to say take it to the next level because that sounds cheesy and cliched, but essentially take it to the next level or decide that you just don't have that time. And I think we've realized that we don't have that time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, like, I mean, one of the things we've spoken about is that, you know, the bare bones of recording an episode, that's an hour or hour and a half out of our mornings once every 2 weeks. But then it's the editing of that episode, it's the promotion, it's the putting stuff out on social media, it's the managing all of that. You know, there's no point having a podcast if people aren't listening to it. So there's all this work to do that goes around that. And we've just found, I've found that that's been really difficult increasingly, just to find the time to do that work, to sit down and to have the energy to do it. And I think that it's the kind of difference between, you know, we could have a chat once every couple of weeks and that would be lovely. And I probably think we will keep chatting, you know, and doing this stuff. But there's sort of the extra level of work that it comes to then to turn that into a proper podcast is really quite hard. And I think that that's kind of the stuff that we realize we just don't have the time for at this point in time.
It's all the bloody admin, Simon.
Oh, I know. It always is.
Yeah. So without, I guess, making this an overly masturbatory conversation, which I think is there's always a risk with this sort of thing.
Because look, it's our last episode. Why can't we just masturbate?
Well, no, you're right. Let's have a mutual wank for 40 minutes and call it a day. You know, some might argue that that's what we've been doing for 4 years, but we'll tone it down a bit, perhaps for this one, or tone it up.
Tone it up. Yeah, I think tone it up is the real way we should be doing it.
But I think what brought us together really is a shared interest in critique as an idea, and really questioning some of the dogmas of queer politics and LGBTI politics, and wanting to always come from a place of questioning what we think and what others think, and trying to always shift the ground under our feet a little bit to be finding new ways of thinking and coming to new conclusions. And that's something I've found really exciting doing with you. And so I think that hopefully this last reflection here will still embody the spirit of critiquing what we've done and thinking about, I don't know, where our thinking might even go in the future. It's also really worth saying that Simon and I barely knew each other when we started this. It's kind of funny to think about now. Totally. We met through the Star Observer when both of us were columnists there at the same time, and just kind of caught up and realized that we clicked in that particular way. And I almost feel like this podcast is in lots of ways the story of us just kind of becoming friends and getting to know
each other.
Yeah,
it really is. Like, it really is. And I think that you can see that in the first, like, episodes. Not that I'd ever go back and listen to them ever again. You know, they're sort of, they're very much more rigid and, you know, one of us talked, then the other one talked, and then the other one talked. There's no interruptions. There's no, like, back and forth because we just didn't really know each other very well. And I think that we still have some files somewhere. I might still have some files somewhere from episodes that we never released that we tried, like in the first, before we properly started this thing, which would have been even more the same. But I think it's, I totally agree that, like, it's been nice to sort of develop our friendship as we've gone along the way, and then also realize, like, where we disagree and where we have differences, and sort of feeling comfortable engaging with that more and more. And I think definitely, that's been really nice as well.
Totally, because I almost feel like that's the biggest thing that's changed over the years, is that I think early on, for me in particular, I found our disagreements really confronting in some ways. Like when we would have episodes where we would really be coming from a different position. But I think it's, I don't know, I guess it's as simple as there's just a lot more trust in the relationship now, and so we can have episodes where we are coming from really different places, and that's productive rather than a block to something.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
So thinking about some of the discussions that we've had, do you have some things that particularly stand out? I guess not just favorites, but also kind of turning points, perhaps, where you feel like the podcast did really become something new or something different or more interesting?
I think I will always... One of the earlier episodes, actually, I think one of the things that we first disagreed on was on the notion of family and the community in queer spaces. Mm. And that is something that has sort of stuck with me ever since that we sort of first disagreed upon it, like about... And it actually happened in an episode about RuPaul's Drag Race, and we were talking about... I think we were talking about things we love in gay culture, and we were talking about RuPaul's Drag Race. And I mentioned that I really like the sort of family-oriented nature of it, and you sort of immediately reacted to that quite negatively. And I was like, oh, I was quite confronted by that at the time, but it's one thing that has stuck with me, and thinking about what does it mean to be family, what does it mean to be a community, what does that look like, how do we constantly exclude people from that space, and how is that happening all the time, and why is that happening, and sort of breaking down those barriers of the queer community and what that actually means, because I think that I came in potentially with a more, I don't know, maybe naive view in my own head about that. And I think it was really valuable to sort of really have that challenged. And I think that that's something that's really stuck with me, and that I keep thinking about in different ways, and about how the queer community, whatever you want to call it, I don't think it really exists. You know, I increasingly just don't see it existing as a homogenous blob in many ways, despite all of the narratives that exist around that. Mm. And how the use of family, the use of the term family is used as a way to create a connection that often isn't there. And I think, you know, we spoke about that in the first episode of RuPaul's Drag Race, and then we had that episode, another episode where about RuPaul's Drag Race, about the, not the last season, but the season before, when we talked about the vixen, the drag queen, the drag queen who sort of, there was this big fight because of, and Rue sort of really sort of almost turned on her. And it kind of was like, oh, here is like the proof of exactly what you were talking about in terms of the notion of family, and how you don't behave in the way of what a queer family should look like, and you sort of get pushed to the sidelines of it. And I think that was something that's been interesting to watch develop in our discussions as we've gone along the way.
Well, and I think that was true. That stuff came up also in the Conflict Is Not Abuse discussion that we had, where I think Sarah Schulman makes some similar critiques. I think for me, when I think about particularly discussions we've had where we have, come from really different positions, and I think, like, I don't know, my favorite episodes of Queers are always ones where we basically through discussion, can be through disagreement, but more generally just through, like, talking stuff through, come to new conclusions or maybe come into it with set opinions, but by the end of it we're like, oh shit, actually maybe this other new really cool thing that we hadn't really thought about. And one of my favorite episodes that we've ever done, actually is a fairly recent one earlier this year, was the What Can You Do episode. It ended up, I think we made it a two-parter in the end.
I think we started as a one-parter and then realized we had to do two.
Yeah, totally, because the discussion was just kind of getting so big. It was a discussion about the role of individuals in making structural change, basically. And you know, I think it's telling in some ways that over the past, particularly over the past maybe 18 months of the podcast, we've turned increasingly to debates in feminism in some ways.
Yeah, we really have, yeah.
More than in queer politics. I mean, obviously there's a lot of overlap there, but, you know, consent has been a really significant theme on the podcast. You know, I don't know, I'd be interesting maybe to reflect on why that shift has kind of happened. But I think we've come from quite different places in terms of you really emphasizing coalition building and solidarity as a really great foundation for political change, and me, I think, thinking a lot more about, not, I think, at the expense of those ideas of solidarity and coalition building, but also thinking about, you know, individual self-critique and self-reflection and that sort of stuff. And yeah, I don't know, I think that I probably have a much more complex and nuanced view on that now, and that on the ways that those things can interact. I think that's really come through discussing this stuff with you, to think about the ways that those two things you know, potentially in conflict, but maybe not. But, you know, maybe also can really be hand in hand to create political change.
Yeah, and I remember that episode quite well in the way that we it was probably an area. I think I was having a look back at the episode's descriptions, and I think in that one it was the description said it's the most we've ever disagreed. And I think it's true, and I think it's interesting. Like we were talking about in particular, I think that was about sort of men changing their behaviour in relation to sexual assault and sex
violence
strokes
women,
and
violence
against women and that kind of stuff. And I think that it's interesting. I think to look outside the sort of queer space, the so-called, you know, I think this obviously is relevant in the queer space as well, to see how those sorts of debates influence the politics that we have. And I think we probably would still disagree on some of that stuff, but I agree as well that it's been useful to like engage in those conversations and to try and nuance it. I always feel like, I don't know, in my academic world, it's kind of, there's the constant incorporation of different arguments to nuance your own position. And I think that that's a really valuable thing to be doing. And it's something that doesn't happen a lot in you know, if we're looking at, you know, we've had a lot of discussions about online, about social media on this podcast as well. You know, there's none of that, a lot of that doesn't happen in those spaces where it's you know, this is my position, I'm just going to stick to it, and I'll never incorporate other people's positions to or think about it or see how I can incorporate elements of that. And it's been really interesting to think about in that particular debate, because I do come from a very, I think, a different perspective to you in many ways. But like thinking about how, okay, so for me, you know, thinking about the sort of grand coalition building type stuff and solidarity work, and thinking about how processes of self-critique and self-engagement a part of that has been really valuable for me, and has been a really interesting way to think about those questions. And it's interesting, it's good and interesting to hear that you're sort of the same on the other side in many ways. Like that's quite nice incorporation of different each other's arguments into our own sort of positions is a very nice thing to be able to do.
Totally. I felt like I was channeling you in queer reading group last week, actually, in that we were having a discussion about actually it's a topic you would be quite interested in, like queer ecology, and so kind of queerness and environmentalism. We read two different articles that were like coming from completely different perspectives. One of them was like a very sort of queer theory, like queering nature type thing. Like, let's how can we kind of look to nature to deconstruct the ways that it's been framed in like heteronormative ways.
Yeah.
But then the other one was basically about how can we use LGBTI political structures and movements to address climate change. And it was kind of fascinating with that second article that, you know, I found it frustrating in lots of ways, because there were all these sort of appeals to like neoliberal economics, basically. Like basically arguing that we should fight against climate change because queers tend to be lower socioeconomic status and they'll suffer more from the effects of climate change. But it was this very sort of individualist almost approach or self-interested approach. But then I was kind of like, look, yeah, some of that stuff doesn't sit well with me, but ultimately these people are arguing that we should use queer political platforms to fight for this cause that's really good. And so maybe who cares? Like maybe, you know, that they're ultimately invested in solidarity and coalition building is great, and to some degree I should just take that at face value.
Yeah it's interesting. I'm gonna have to read the article before I really
Totally. I didn't mean to bring a whole
I think it's fascinating, because so much of my perspective, anyway, we shouldn't dive into this into too much depth, but so much of my perspective of the sort of individual versus collective stuff comes from a background in working in environmentalism and climate change, in where the climate change movement has spent a lot of time talking about individual actions, and it's achieved, in my view, nothing or very little. And because, you know, the sort of, and I'm talking about like very specific individuals, like drive less, take fuel flights, change your light bulbs, that kind of bullshit.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that it's interesting thinking about that, because it's such a specific thing that people can do to reduce their impact, blah, 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 blah. But how it's sort of, there's all this evidence about how it sort of actually has negative effects. It makes people feel impotent. It makes people feel like they can't achieve anything because their influence is so little by changing a light bulb. And that has really influenced my positioning when it comes to a lot of these other things around which in which the cases are often sometimes more complex, you know, when it comes to like violence against women, for example, or homophobia, all those kinds of things. And it's like it's important to remember where that comes from, but also to think about how it's different for different spaces. And it's interesting to hear you bring that up in the in this context, because I think that like it can also be different for different contexts in many ways.
Yeah, of course. I was looking over the list of things that stood out to me from episodes we've recorded and themes that I think we've really returned to again and again. And I think some of the most interesting stuff for me is around the idea of what queerness is and what queer politics is and the value of queer politics. I think a lot about a comment that Helen Razor made when we interviewed her. I think she was our first interview on the podcast was like, I can't remember how she put it, but she basically said queer politics is only valuable in the ways that it brings people into kind of anti-capitalist politics and movements more generally. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I agree with her, but I do think that thinking about the utility of queerness as an idea and as a politics is really interesting. Like one of my favorite episodes we did was Andrew Garfield's Queer Utopia, where we talked about like what a kind of utopian vision for the kinds of politics that we're interested in relation to queerness might look like. And then we did an episode as well, which I think was the first episode it was very early on. It was in our first maybe 6 months. And I reckon it was the first episode we did that I really felt like pushed us to somewhere new. Which was the imagined political queer, which was really just trying to think about in a really basic way if queerness is even a thing in terms of a way to describe a group of people, and what does that mean, and what is the utility of that both from a political sense but also from a personal sense. So that to me has been a really interesting theme, I guess, across the past 4 years of the podcast.
Yeah, and I think it's something that for me has changed quite a lot as well, in the sense that I think that if I was going back in time, or if I was to redo this podcast now, I would not be sure how I'd use the term queer, or I'd be using it very differently to how I was when we first started this.
And
I think
this
for me,
this is that Jared Bartles influence, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh no, it's not his influence. It's my gosh. But for me, it's like I identify with it less. It's not because I think the term still has heaps of value, and I still like it a lot. But I think that my perspective of it has changed, and it's changed around the different ways that it gets used by the quote-unquote queer community. And I think that there's a difference between... And I was just thinking about this in terms of what you're saying about Helen Razor's comments, and I think that there's a difference between the sort of queerness as an identity versus queerness as a political practice. And I am less inclined to see queerness as my identity now, because I think that there's a lot of queerness as identity that I don't actually enjoy very much versus queerness as a political practice. And so I think if you were to ask me now, compared to 4 years ago, how I identify my sexuality, I'd be much more inclined to say gay, whereas I would think about sort of potential queer political practice that can be much more interesting. And I think that has changed across the time of the podcast in many different ways. And it's been interesting to have those conversations and to have that sort of be a theme that keeps popping back in and out, because I think that has certainly influenced how I've thought about the podcast, but also how I thought about this sort of politics and how I used that term. I very much came in at the time sort of identifying as queer and seeing that as a way forward. And I don't necessarily see that anymore as a way forward. I think that the challenging of our own identities and the challenging of how we think about sexual identities and then how we separate the identity from the political practice, I think has been a really interesting way of engaging in the conversation.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets, featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
Yeah, gosh, it kind of makes me think about the question of not just how my political views might have changed over the course of the podcast, but just my kind of views on my on myself, you know, and my experience of sexuality. And I think, yeah, it's interesting. I feel like I'm also increasingly embracing gay, not just as an identity term, but as a kind of political position. There's something
I agree with that too. Yeah.
That I quite like about it's, I don't know, queer has become so mushy. Like it feels like it just doesn't mean very much anymore. And I think even when it is used in the way that it was, you know, like I guess in the queer theory sense of that critique and undermining and, you know, tearing apart of foundations and those sorts of things. I don't know. Like I think that there's a lot of value in that. And I think it's a really important part of not just politics, but of sort of being in the world is to question things and question yourself and question the world in those ways. But I also can get frustrated with the ways that I don't think people often do a good job of connecting that to anything beyond almost like abstract thought experiments. Like what is that? What do those ideas kind of mean in the world? I think
I think it doesn't do enough. Like, I think that it's... So this is where, you know, going back to what I was just saying before, I think that there's... I see a value in a queer political practice, but I don't think it... I think I see a value, but I don't see enough of, like, an entirety of a value. And I think that it doesn't do enough in the sense that it does the critique for us, but doesn't take us to the what else, to the where next kind of space. And you could look at this... You know, I was just thinking about one of the critiques I have of a lot of sort of queer political practice at the moment is that it is only engaged in critique. It is only, we're only engaged in a telling everybody how they're doing things terribly kind of space, where any attempt for people to do things, particularly people who aren't queer enough to sort of engage in this sort of politics, are immediately critiqued, told that they're not doing it right. There's always some sort of new way of not doing things right. And I think we've had these conversations quite a bit in the podcast about examples we've seen online where people have been really quickly pushed out because they used the wrong term or they used the wrong, they did the wrong thing. And there's no productive capacity in that. There's no, like, what can we do well? How can we work together well? Where do we sit together well? Where's the solidarity? What's the outcomes we want to achieve, et cetera, et cetera, that engages in that. And I think that the critique that queerness brings, that a queer theory brings, that a queer politics brings, is really valuable, and the sort of constant challenging is really useful. But I struggle with that when it becomes the only thing.
Totally. And I guess, like, I'm not sure that that's necessary. Like, I think in
it's not practice, necessarily true of queer theory, right?
Yeah, like, totally.
It's a practice I think it's a practice of how it's occurring. You know, when you said queer is a bit mushy, I think that it's often how, you know, there's the difference between the way it's thought of and the way it acts out in real life.
Yeah, sure. But though I do think that challenge is also in some ways inherent to the theory. Like, I guess I hold out some hope that, yeah, I don't know. I think that that's a really worthwhile thing to keep thinking about and to keep working on is, like, what is the political utility of queer theory and queerness? Is, I mean, maybe there's not very much. I don't know. I don't know. I guess it's that thing of separating out it being used badly and its inherent potential.
Yep.
And I don't have an answer to that.
No, I don't think I have an answer to that either. And I think that maybe, I mean, this is sort of, that has been a running theme of the podcast, is that we, you know, every time things just get more complex than we want them to. And I think I probably came into this podcast having, you know, we chose the name Queers as a, like, I came in with a very optimistic view of that potential, of that term, of that language, of that politics, of all of that stuff. And I think that I've come out with a much more mushy, complex thought process that sort of really goes, oh, there's so much of this that I like, there's so much of it I dislike, I just don't know how to merge those things together. How do we engage with that? I'm not less optimistic, but I think I'm less, I've got a much
less
more complex.
Sure.
Less yeah. sure, yeah. Less sure is actually the best term in terms of what I feel like I'm a naturally optimistic person, which is valuable for me. I like it, but but I think that I'm definitely much less sure about, particularly about the sort of the queer politics nature of it and what that looks like, and you know, and sort of that's where I'm swinging back to sort of, well, was the potential in something like a gay politics, and what is that difference, and how do we. Can we incorporate some of those positive things as well?
What would we call the podcast now? Like Gaybos?
Sydney Gays.
Yeah, that's, you know, despite the fact that only one of us lives in Sydney and I'm not
yeah.
from here.
Sorry, that was mean.
So I think another question that we were interested in reflecting on in this discussion was... Like, we've talked a lot about how we've changed, I guess, and about how our thinking has changed. I mean, 4 years is in some ways not a long time, but I think given the pace, the increasing pace at which political discourse changes through, you know, I think driven by, like, online spaces, for example, do you think that I mean, God, I'm hedging in a million ways, but... Are discussions around queerness and queer issues, have they changed significantly in the past 4 years? I guess specifically in the kinds of spaces that we inhabit.
I think they have. I mean, I think it's inevitable that they have. I think there's been one, like in Australia, there's been like really one very major event that's happened, or maybe two major events that's happened over the time that we've been doing this podcast. The first being... the safe schools debate that was a kind of running theme that happened during the podcast. And the second one obviously being the marriage equality postal survey and the sort of passage of marriage equality legislation here. And I think that there's no doubt in my mind that in Australia has changed a lot of queer politics. Both of those events have changed a lot of queer politics. You know, and we've talked about this a lot in the podcast. I think that there's a much more sort of vulnerability-focused politics that's happening now, a lot more victim politics. I hate using that term because it's such a right-wing term, but I think it's true to an extent. The sort of... And I feel like it's actually, since the marriage equality survey, it's made queer politics... in many ways, for me, much more reactive and much more and a little bit lost, like at the moment in Australia, in the Australian context. I don't know, you know, there seems to be less of a sort of forward thinking, what could the world look like approach, and much more of a reactive to attacks, whether they're real or perceived attacks that are happening. And that's my very downcast view of it at this point in time, of the sort of specific politics that are happening. But I think that has certainly happened across the 4 years we've been doing this.
Yeah, I'd broadly agree with that. I think I have a much less clear picture of how... Yeah, it's funny. When I was looking back over what we've done over the past 4 years, interestingly, I feel like... when we were trying to grapple with both of those events as they were happening, but marriage equality in particular, I think that's almost when the podcast was the most challenging for us. Like, I look back at those times and I think it's when, I mean, I don't know, I don't want to speak for you, but from my perspective, it's almost when we were most unsure about what we were doing and the value of the work. And I don't know, I just remember, and we also talked about this on the podcast at the time, I remember just feeling so alienated during the marriage equality debate, just feeling like I was not a part of whatever the imaginary queer community or LGBTI community that was fighting for this thing was, despite attempts to be a part of it and to campaign and that sort of thing. And yeah, I don't know, that was really challenging. But I also think that something that the podcast has demonstrated, and I think the past few years has demonstrated in these political discussions, is that our people are out there. I mean, people listen to this podcast. Yeah. We get amazing feedback. We get really insightful engagement. And I do think, you know, like there's that famous saying that every political movement generates its counter movement. And maybe the dominance of these of vulnerability politics of homonationalism, of respectability politics, we are starting to see more, and we are a part of that, I guess. Yeah, we're starting to see a counter politics. I don't want to say emerging, because I think it's always been there, but getting louder and finding a more cohesive voice and being listened to, and that gives me hope.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I 100% agree with that. So I think that there's my downcast view, and then there's my more optimistic view, which is the seeing the people who are engaging with this sort of content, and not just our content, but I think I see it popping up all the time, this sort of similar critiques. And I mean, I think that the critiques of identity politics, the critiques of respectability politics that we've been making, you see that replicated across so many different places. And I see this, for me, it's always the conversations with the people you don't expect. Like, the, you know, when you have a conversation with someone and you start engaging with this and you're like, oh, should I be careful about my own critiques? And then suddenly they're sort of launching into something that's very similar. And like, oh, okay, so there are people who have similar concerns and similar discussions. And it's, you're not sort of, we're not talking to a void here. There's actually a whole range of people who have similar concerns. And I think it's nice to recognize that and that certainly gives me hope.
Yeah, I agree.
So maybe we should just finish off with one, like, I mean, we're coming to the end of our last episode, but I think it's been really nice to reflect on the conversations. But Ben, maybe we should ask, like, getting to the end, what do you think was the point of doing this? What have we achieved? You know, have we achieved anything? Did we need to achieve anything?
What was the point of this? I mean, I guess the very personal answer is that I have found it incredibly valuable and probably needed an outlet for having these sorts of discussions. I felt when we started this, I mean, we literally started this podcast because we both of us were independently looking for these kinds of discussions and couldn't find them. And yeah, I don't know. I do just still totally believe through this and through the queer reading group and through other things that I do in the value of discussion and the generative power of talking things through and debating and disagreeing. And I think that, I mean, it's just literally been good for me, for my thinking, for getting to know you. I mean, that's all good stuff, I think. In terms of broader achievements, obviously, I am so wary of not just being super modest about how we talk about this, but I would like to think that we have participated in or been really part of opening a bit of a door to these kinds of discussions and maybe, like, again, trying really hard not to say, there are lots of other people doing this kind of work, right? But I think and I hope that we've played a part in normalizing critique, normalizing debate and discussion, and providing an alternative way to think about the sorts of issues that we discuss. And I have no real idea of the impact that we've made on the people that listen to us or anything, right? But I hope that we have had one.
Yeah, I think that it's always the challenge with this kind of stuff. And, you know, I feel this all the time with my work, that it's, you know, with the academic work, and I'm sure you feel this sort of similar in the comms work that you do. that there's always this challenge of like, how on earth can we understand the impact that you're having?
Mm.
Like, there's this, I mean, in academia, there's this constant talk about impact, and nobody actually knows how to measure it or what it means. And so, yeah, we can't say, look, here is a concrete goal we've achieved. But I do agree that hopefully we've played a part in these conversations. And if we've played a part in these conversations and that has been valuable in and of itself, we're not the only ones. It's not like we came out and were the first people to say this stuff or to engage in this kind of way. But I think more people doing it, the better. And so if we're doing it, then I hope other people are doing it too, and we can engage in that and we can work to, you know, and be part of that sort of ongoing conversation. And I think that we're in a stage where the world needs hopefully more of this kind of stuff, where we need to be moving away from the sort of very black and white thinking that I think that often exists in our world. And so I'm quite happy to be part of that process. And if we've done it with us, you know, with a small group of people who are our listenership, I'm happy that they've been part of that process. And I think you're right. We've had some really amazing feedback. And that has been worth it for me. Whenever we get that feedback, whenever we get those comments, that has always been worth it for me. And so that is enough. And then obviously the sort of relationship we've built has been worth it for me too. So I think that all these things come together. It's been quite nice. And, you know, we've done a little bit, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also something that I think is really important to both of our practices, I guess, if you can call it that, is that at the same time that we are having these discussions, we are also living in the world and doing other things. I mean, both of us are, you know, fairly active in activism in different ways. We're both fairly involved in different communities. And I think that not only, I think there's a real symbiotic relationship between those two things. And I almost think you need to have both. I think it would be a problem if we were just sitting here and being kind of armchair philosophers or armchair critics and not actually engaged in the kinds of stuff that we're talking about. But I think both of us try really hard to put our money where our mouths are and to be a part of the world. And to me, there's no point doing one without the other, right?
Oh, yeah. And I think that if we, you know, it'd be really odd, you know, we were talking before about the nature of critique and the sort of limits of critique when we talk about queer politics. And it would be really odd to be like, here is all these limits of critique. We're doing things productively and being proactive about things, and then not to do that ourselves. And like,
yeah, that'd be shit.
Yeah, we kind of sit here and critique the sort of the nature of what's happening in queer politics, and then try and not be engaged in it. And sometimes I feel like I'm not engaged as much as I'd like to be with a whole range of different politics. I mean, there's so many different things I'd like to be involved in. But I think it's important to be constantly striving for that and to being proactive and being involved and to being engaged and to doing that kind of stuff. And I think that it's really important to be doing so. Like, I've always thought the people the theorists I love the best are always the ones who are also actively engaged in a day-to-day life, right? And that's the kind of, you know, whenever I think about my academic work, I'm just thinking about that now. It's often the people who were engaged in politics that also, I think, bring out the best of the theories. And so we have to keep doing that. You can't just sit and be armchair philosophers. Sitting in ivory towers doing this kind of stuff is not the way I want to do it.
Yep, agreed. Do you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Thank you, everyone. This is kind of weird to do this last little wrap-up segment now. We want to say a huge thank you to everyone who's subscribed on Patreon. We kind of had all these ideas for it and dreams for it, and obviously a lot of that hasn't come to pass, but we cannot stress how much we have valued the people that have financially supported us on there. It has meant so much, not just materially, but also in terms of, I don't know, it's morale, I guess, to know that people are willing to do that. We will be shutting it down basically when we release this, but you can, you'll still, I don't actually know what happens to a Patreon page once you close it down, but
I'm assuming that you'll still get access. I'll double check that.
Yeah, totally. So you should still be able to access the bonus episodes on there. And obviously, I mean, we're not closing down any of our channels, I'd say that we might be a bit slower in getting to responses, but I think we can, we're not always super quick at getting back to people anyway, so maybe it won't make much of a difference. You can email us, of course, at... now I'm stepping on your toes. You can still get in touch with us, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, we'll keep the email account open. So that's queerspodcast@gmail.com. And I think for the moment, we'll keep the Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram open as well. That's @queerspodcast. Sure. Yeah. I mean, we'll certainly be posting details about these episodes, and then we'll just see how we're going along the way. But if and when those slow down, we still have our personal social media accounts. I'm on Twitter @SimonCopland and on Facebook @SimonCoplandWriter, and Ben is on Twitter @BenCReilly.
The podcast is going to stay on our website as well, so it'll still be accessible through Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all of those places. Lip Media, our really excellent podcast network, we can't stress enough how fantastic they've been and how supportive Dan there has been for everything that we've done. He's just been fantastic to work with, and you should check out all their shows and all of that. And they've very generously offered to continue hosting the episodes, so those will all still be available. And if you stay subscribed to the feed, who knows, you know, we might finally get to interview Sarah Shulman or Christos Tsokas or another one of our heroes, and then this is as good a platform as any to do that and to put that up. So stay subscribed, and I don't know, Simon and I might also just kind of, something will happen and we'll go, fuck, we can't not talk about this. Keep an eye out there. And if you do that, you know, review and rate it. We think that we've put a lot of good work out over the past 4 years. This is episode 64, I think, but on top of that, you know, all the interviews and bonus things, I think there's upwards of 75 or so episodes up there, and it would be great if people continued to listen to those, so please do still tell people about it and recommend it if there are people you think would like it.
And on that note, I think we just have to say thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for being part of this conversation. We have really, really appreciated it. And thank you to you, Ben, for the 4 years of great podcast making. And this will be the sort of us saying goodbye for now. As we've said, we might come back at some point in the future. But at the moment, goodbye and thank you very much.
Oh, thanks, Simon. Thank you as well. It's been an absolute pleasure to do this with you for the past 4 years. Bye, everyone.
And we'll see you all soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.